Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer, cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, The Films, The Stones and Brian Jones, The Strangler, and Robot Dreams.
Well, I would like to start off by talking about rock and roll a bit, because there is a very, very good new documentary out called The Stones and Brian Jones. And you guessed it, it's about the Rolling Stones and about Brian Jones, a founding member of the group and certainly the most tragic member of the group, with a very short life, comparatively speaking. He died in 1969. The Stones had only been in existence for a few years at that point. And this movie describes and kind of illustrates the short life of Brian Jones and parallels that with the growth of the Rolling Stones and the phenomenal success that that group has very deservedly had. Of course, the group is still around very much, but poor Brian Jones has not been with us for many decades now. So this is a documentary by Nick Broomfield, who is a veteran documentary maker. He's made a whole lot of documentaries, some better than others. I think this is one of his very best works. It's a really, really good picture. So Brian Jones, obviously the Rolling Stones were all English, and he came from a sort of a middle-class home, and he, from very early on, Brian Jones had a conflict with his parents, and especially his father, who really didn't want him to pursue this music track, to become a musician, to do all this stuff. It's kind of funny to think how somebody becomes one of the biggest rock stars in the world, and their mother and father are saying, oh, why are you doing that? Why don't you settle down and get a regular job? But anyway, that's the way it kind of was. Apparently, as a child, and the father says this, we hear his voice at various points in the movie, he was sort of a model child, a model student, went to school, did his homework, did everything right, but started to rebel against authority when he entered adolescence and through his teenage years. He had this attitude, this is in the movie, why should I listen to what somebody says just because they're older than me? And so he kind of started to go very much on his own track, and he became really fascinated with music and especially with the blues. And he really wanted the Rolling Stones to be a blues group or a rhythm and blues group, not to be a sort of a straight out rock and roll group. In any case, he started his own band, and in the meanwhile, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards had started their own band, and then the two bands came together and combined and became eventually the Rolling Stones, named after a song by Muddy Waters, one of their rhythm and blues idols. And the trajectory then started to go way, way up. We see in the movie that it wasn't always smooth. For example, the Stones did not at all like the first single, which they found much too pop music, not nearly enough of the blues that they really wanted. But obviously, they got that straightened out, and they started on their path upwards to world fame, international fame, global fame. And Brian Jones was there along for the whole ride, of course. Now, again, things obviously went wrong because Brian Jones's life was cut short, and one of the big causes has to do with apparently just an instability built right into his personality. On a number of occasions, he had a girlfriend, I think at least five times, who he then impregnated and then broke up with. So he has all these children running around with all these different mothers, and he is never, ever there to be the husband and father. So that's one thing. Apparently, in his own personality, there was this streak of real irresponsibility. There was also, according to the movie, and I think this is probably true, a certain kind of paranoia. He felt that he was somehow never getting his due, that people were taking things away from him. And this particularly took the form of rivalry with Mick Jagger. Brian Jones expected he originally would be the leader of the group, and he kind of was. He was sometimes lead guitarist, sometimes rhythm guitarist, but he was very much front and center. But of course, Mick Jagger was the vocalist of the group, and the vocalist often sort of becomes almost de facto the leader of a group, and that really happened here. Mick Jagger became the leader of the Stones, and Brian Jones felt jealous and envious and that he had somehow been shut out. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards started doing an enormous amount of songwriting, and Brian Jones could never quite get the hang of songwriting. He tried, but he had no confidence in himself, never knew whether he was getting it right or not. So the poor guy felt in second place because he couldn't write songs, and he felt in second place, or maybe less than second place, because Mick Jagger had taken over as the leader of the group. And he was an unhappy guy, Brian Jones was, in various ways. And again, he never quite managed to get a stable personal life going either. Now, along the way that we're finding out about all these facts about Brian Jones and his relationship with the other Rolling Stones, we're seeing footage of the Stones in their early career and beyond their early career. And we see the phenomenal success that they became back in the 1960s, and how fans, largely female fans, would storm the barricades and get past the guards and the police, and sometimes male fans too, and jump up on the stage, and there would be chaos. And there's a lot of very, I found, entertaining footage, although sometimes it's kind of harrowing as well, of the way that the kind of rock and roll hysteria that once ruled the earth. And it's quite fascinating to see all that stuff too. But we always return to the story of Brian Jones and what was happening with him along the way. Well, eventually he got really into drugs. Of course, there was a lot of drugs around in the 60s rock scene, generally speaking. But he also got really into alcohol. And eventually it became that he simply couldn't function with the group anymore. And they came to realize it. And eventually the time came when they were going to go on tour, and they realized there is no way that this guy can join us on the tour. He just might not even show up for a concert. He won't be around. He'll be gone for days. And when he is around, he can barely function because of the drugs and the booze. So then they just broke up with him. And then his life really declined. And he famously died in 1969 in a swimming pool. Apparently just a lot of drugs and alcohol in his system, and may have just even fallen asleep in the swimming pool. In any case, he died. And that was the end of that. The Stones, of course, persevered. They did do a sort of a memorial concert to him not long after he died, and the movie has a tiny bit of footage of that, and it was attended by astonishing numbers of people. But of course, poor Brian Jones wasn't there to see it or hear it or simply experience it. We hear archival voices of Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, Charlie Watts. Bill Wyman does appear, the old Bill Wyman, does appear at various times and gives some of his reminiscences, and it's fun to see him and hear him. And it's just a really, really good rock and roll documentary. I wrote a book on rock and roll movies. That's what it's called, Rock and Roll Movies, and it's available from Rutgers University Press. And I want to plug that. Of course, this movie is not in it because it was published a few years ago. But if I did a second edition, The Stones and Brian Jones would surely be in it. It's a really good rock and roll documentary. Anybody interested in rock and roll, in the Rolling Stones, or in the 1960s should absolutely catch up with The Stones and Brian Jones. Now I would like to touch on something very, very different. It's a movie from way back in 1970, and it is known in English as The Strangler. It is a French movie by the director Paul Vecchiali, who actually died a few months ago, and I think that's one of the reasons why this movie is now back in movie theaters in a nice that they've restored it, and so it's been returned to the way it probably looked when it was more or less new. It is called The Strangler, L'Étrangleur, in French, and it's about a strangler, and it has a very odd sort of story. Sometimes is not even quite clear what is happening. It's that sort of film. It's very much an art film, even though it's also a horror film, but it's an interesting movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but it's definitely an interesting one. It's been compared with the kind of Italian movie known as giallos, which are sort of horror movies, suspense movies, mystery movies, again, usually sort of with an art film kind of of tinge to them. Some of the great giallo makers include people like Dario Argento and Lucio Fulci and Mario Bava. These are big names for people who are into horror films or into suspense movies. And this is not really a giallo movie, partly because it's French and not Italian. But it partakes of that sensibility. So yes, it's called The Strangler, and the main character is in fact a strangler. But his crimes, even though they're shown in the movie in some cases, this is not an over-the-top violence movie. Again, it's more of an art movie. So we have all these horrible murders that take place. He murders women, he strangles women, he kills women. But the things are shown without any sort of graphic, gothic kind of horror stuff. And sometimes the women seem to not even be really trying to get away. And then a very odd circumstance here is that there's another figure who always seems to be with the strangler. And when the police are after the strangler, they're confused by who is this other person who always seems to be around. Well, this turns out to be a thief. After the strangler has killed a woman, and by the way, he does it for the pleasure of killing, not to rob them, then this other guy is a thief who comes in and robs the women after they're dead. So there are these two people who are committing all these horrifying crimes, and the police are after them. And then a woman steps forth, and she wants to help catch the strangler, and she agrees to be used as bait so that she will go out in the nights, and maybe the strangler will come to her, and then the cops can catch him. However, the cops aren't interested in this deal. They think it's too dangerous, and they don't think it's going to work. So that's the sort of movie this is. Again, it is a horror movie. It is not a very bloody horror movie, that's for sure, although it does have violence in it. And it is an art movie, and it's all directed in this very odd sort of slippery style by this interesting, recently deceased director, Paul Vecchiali. So I just wanted to call attention to it. It's always nice when older movies that have some worth are revived and put back in movie theaters, as has happened with The Strangler. And it's a worthwhile film. It's by no means a great movie, but anybody interested in horror movies of the 1970s era or in the giallo genre, even though this isn't exactly a giallo, should check out The Strangler. It's a worthwhile and interesting movie. Finally now, a movie which is a little bit closer to the mainstream. It's an animated film, a movie called Robot Dreams. And this is made by the Spanish director, Pablo Berger. And it's a hand-drawn animation, so it doesn't look anything like the Pixar movies that are so popular nowadays. And it's a very nice movie. A lot of critics have raved about it. I don't find it worth raving about. I found it a little bit too low-key to really get exciting, although it's always nice to see a low-key movie and a low-key animation once in a while. But it's a good movie. Not a great movie, but a good movie. Again, it's called Robot Dreams, and yes, one of the main characters is a robot. The other main character is a dog. The dog's name is Dog, and the robot's name is Robot. And poor Dog lives in Greenwich Village in New York City, and we always see, when we see the city in a longer shot, we see the World Trade Center towers in the background, so it is not today's New York City, although it's not that far back in the past. And poor Dog lives in Greenwich Village, and he is lonely. There's just nothing in his life. He goes to work, but he doesn't enjoy things, and he comes home, and he's just so lonesome, lonely. So he sees a commercial on TV for robots, and he decides he's going to buy a robot for a companion. And he buys the robot, some assembly required, but Dog has no trouble with that at all. And before you know it, the robot is his best friend and his companion, and they're going around and they're doing all these fun things in New York City together. So Dog has found the companionship that he needs, and the robot just seems to be a real nice robot. And the two of them spend their time together, and it's very, very nice. And by the way, all the characters in this movie, except for Robot, are animals. So we see a New York City entirely populated by all different kinds of animals. Again, our main character is a dog named Dog. But then something happens. Well, a lot of things happen. But one of the things that happens is that at one point they go to the beach and something happens to Robot. It's not exactly clear what. Maybe the water freezes his joints or something, but he becomes immobilized. And poor Robot is lying on his back on the beach and he can't move. Okay, so Dog obviously has to come in and take him home and fix him or something. Only the beach is suddenly closed for the winter. And poor Dog can't get back to the beach to find Robot and save him and help him and get his companion back. So then a whole portion of the movie has Dog trying to somehow get through the New York City bureaucracy so he can get back onto the beach again, get the permission that he needs. But we also have, and this is where the title of the movie comes in, Robot Dreams. We have Robot lying on his back on the beach for long, long periods of time, weeks and weeks, having fantasies of how someday he might get back together with Dog. Well, I won't reveal whether or not these two actually get together again. I will say that the ending of the movie is bittersweet and sort of open-ended in a way, which is also a refreshing change from so many of today's movies. Again, it's a hand-drawn animation. It looks nice, but certainly not spectacular. I don't think it's quite exciting enough for most kids, and I don't think it's quite deep enough for most adults, at least not adults who are looking for a serious movie. But it's a nice movie, a gentle movie, a very sweet looking movie, and it has a sweet story, and it's nice to see for its sweetness alone. So we are in Thanksgiving week as I speak, and I have to say that Robot Dreams would be a nice movie to see on Thanksgiving week because it is a sweet movie for a sweet holiday, and that is, I hope, somewhat sweet story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, The Films, The Stones and Brian Jones, The Strangler, and Robot Dreams.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.